Good morning, and thank you for joining us for Wednesday's episode of the Round Table. And we're going to have an interesting conversation today because one of the reasons I love doing live shows and just speaking to people is you never know what's going to happen. So Monday, we launched the show. Monday was a fabulous show. We had several guests on the show, but I received a wide array of responses about one guest in particular. This guest, I think people were amazed with. They had questions for. I know I definitely had questions for. So today on Wednesday, we're going to bring him back, Mr. Chad McDonald. Good morning, Chad. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
You are so welcome. Now, when we read your bio on Monday, we talked about all these different ways that you were saving the world and helping people and doing good. But we also talked about you being a stay-at-home dad, hence the background, which I love. But there's so much more. Dive into that a little bit more today. What's going on with you today, Chad?
Well, hello everyone, and thanks again for having me on. What's going on today? Well, we're doing our best to remain positive in the face of very grim news. Obviously, what's on everyone's mind these days is COVID and the COVID crisis. And we're here in New York City in Hell's Kitchen, and we're literally in the middle of it. The Javits Center is 10 blocks that way, and it's now a field hospital. The hospital ship berthed 5 blocks right over there, and obviously they'll be taking care of ostensibly non-COVID patients, but I guess we'll see. And Mount Sinai is 12 blocks that way, and that's also very grim. So right now we're doing our best to remain positive. And in the mornings, it's usually time for Liam's homeschooling. What we're discovering with homeschooling is that without the transitions, without bringing children to the next subject and having to pack up a whole classroom of kids, and when they're focused on their work, they get through it pretty quickly. So Liam has usually finished his school day within an hour or two. Just one second, Liam. Can you close that door, please? Close, Liam. Not right now, buddy. Close the door, buddy. Live TV. You gotta love it.
You definitely do.
Yeah, I have a 7-year-old who very much likes to be on camera, and yeah.
I think
So.
we all do because I know on Monday's show we had our co-host Belinda Baker. She
I'm
was there.
here.
Yes, we have you, but I was just talking about on Monday, you were trying to do the show and co-host, and you had your granddaughter there. So it's always the kids who want to be a part of the show. How are you doing today, Belinda?
You know what? I feel better today. Yesterday was a bad day. I do apologize to everyone for not being able to make it, but I'm good today. I'm super good. I'm in bed, laying down, but I'm here.
You look great. I love your hair.
Am I, you know what? I tried to dye it, girl, and it took too much red. But the show still must go on, right?
Yes, I love it. I thought it was a bold statement. I was like, Belinda's sitting in the house. She's bored. She's like, I don't have stuff to do. Let me just change everything. So I think it's bold and I love
Exactly, but I overbold
it. No such thing. No such thing. So the great thing is you both are parents, grandparents. Well, Chad's not a grandparent yet, but you have kids around. And one of the things that we've been talking about this whole week is some of the changes that we've experienced during the course of this quarantine and the COVID-19. And we got to speak to you on Monday for a few minutes, Belinda, about some of the changes that were going on with you. And we talked about your facilities. But I wanted to give you a few more minutes to discuss, you know, how things were as opposed to how things are. You not only have your detox centers, but you also operate your own network. So how's this affecting your world?
You know, it not being able to go outside kind of affects my life in general here, but the business we're considered healthcare. So we're still able to be open. We're still able to help the addicts. We're still there for them. But as my personal life, it does affect, because, you know, my two grandkids are 2 and 5, and my worst fear, my daughters, I love them to death, but sometimes our kids are not as responsible as we are. So I have to make sure they're not taking them out. They're not going places with them. You know, if you take one and go somewhere, bring them here. I'll take care of them. Mm-hmm. So you've been to my house. You see my living room looks like a playground. So yeah, just bring them here. But, you know, it's hard for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And it's hard for me just from my daily life. It affects everyone, whether you're in it or not. It affects you.
Mm-hmm. So, Chad, I want to go back to you being a stay-at-home dad. And we just had the pleasure of meeting little Liam. That was nice. I got to meet him before the show, and I had to ask to borrow his room, you know, so we just borrowed his room so dad can do the show. But Chad, you were speaking about New York, because I don't know why we always think of New York as ground zero, like this is where it all happens. So I know you talked about the hospitals, the helicopters, everything that was going on. But I want to go back to business and being an entrepreneur. On Monday, we spoke briefly about all of your social media and how you're helping other people stay positive during this time of crisis. And I want you to speak on that a little bit more, please.
Okay, well, that has a lot to do with why I'm actually in Liam's room today. When I appeared on the show on Monday, I came off a bit like a doomsday prepper in a bunker, and I didn't want to give that impression off again. So this is actually a more accurate reflection of my kind of personality. I love superheroes, I love sports, and I like to focus on the positive, because I mean, there's certainly enough negative in the world. That's the last thing we need is more of it. So yes, I run a number of social media pages. You can find me on Facebook at The Good, The Chad, and The Ugly. That's sort of like my hub that I work out from. And I deal with different audiences in political, in parenting communities, sports. I'm obviously a giant nerd. So any comic books, toys, and I do toy reviews, things like that. So I think there are 43 Facebook pages in all, and that's not counting anything on Twitter or Instagram or anything like that. So whenever I have anything to say, it very often reaches a lot of people. So for me, it's very important to make the first message of the day a positive one. One of my pages, for example, is called Flowers of New York. And I think it's especially important, especially for New Yorkers, to know that not everything is terrible. We are in serious times, but not everything is terrible. There is still beauty in the world, and that is something that I think is important to get out there every day. So I generally like to start my day with, here's pictures of flowers. It's still okay. There's still stuff out there that is beautiful. Not everything is terrible. That's, I think, even more important as day by day the news becomes more and more grim, that you do need to know that not everything is bad.
I want to go back to, I definitely know that not everything is bad, which is another reason I wanted to do the roundtable, to bring different people together to talk about their experiences. But I want to go back to one of the things that you said, the 43 pages. Now, at any time, just say, Sharifa, I can't give you all my trade secrets, because I'm like a 12-year-old, a little 2-year-old. When I see something that interests me, something I like, I'm all over it. I have a million questions. So feel free to ignore, disregard, not answer any of my questions. But how do you manage 43 different pages? Number one, that's the first question. And you said you always want the first post of the day to be positive. Do you just copy and paste that same positive message to all 43 pages? Or do you come up with a unique, different post for each page?
No, I come up with a unique different post for each page. There's a lot of cross promotion that goes on, for example. So if you go to The Good, The Chad, and The Ugly, you will see a lot from Flowers of New York. You will see something from, I don't know, NFL news and updates. You'll see memes, graphics, videos. One of the things that I like to do that comforts me is, I'm a giant nerd. I grew up in the 70s and the 80s, and I loved my toys. I loved my Star Wars. I loved my superheroes. So I found one thing that brings me comfort, especially in times of you know, stress, is old toys. Old toys make me feel good. Old comic books make me feel better. So I try to post things like that as well. I mean, I do have political commentary. I do make jokes about sports, but one of the things I've been doing recently that's been getting a lot of positive feedback is that I post compilations of old toy commercials. As silly as it sounds, but old commercials for old Star Wars action figures and how corny and kind of weirdly wholesome they seemed back then is it's sort of refreshing to see that now. But yeah, well, generally when I make a post, for example, yesterday I posted when I was on remember this verbiage, supply run.
Yes.
I was on a supply run the other day and I was going by Port Authority. And Port Authority isn't the cheeriest places in the best of times. It's it's a bus station and it can get on the grimy side. And I was across the street from Port Authority and there at the base of a tree were just these small flowers. And I thought they were beautiful and I took a picture of them and you could see Port Authority in the background. And the message for the original Flowers of New York page was that, you know, you can find beauty in places you do not expect it. And when I share that out to the good, the chad, and the ugly or different pages, the message, the copy that I write on that post is different. So on Flowers of New York, I talked about, you know, you'll find beauty in places you don't expect it. And then for the good, the chad, and the ugly, when I shared it to that page, I actually wrote a longer message and a bit of a paragraph, which was, Port Authority isn't the cheeriest place. You know, you don't expect to find beauty there at the best of times, let alone on days like today. But it's important to remember that there is beauty in the world and not everything is terrible. So yes, I write different copy for each time I share the post to a different page.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Now, I know there's been a lot of change as far as personality. One of the things I noticed that changed, at least in my perspective from Belinda, was I felt like she was always professional. But during this quarantine, I was able to see more of a lighter side of Belinda, more fun, more, you know, interesting, all these quips and quotes and, you know, questions to start conversations. Am I just reading into that, Belinda, or is that what you're experiencing now?
Yeah, because you know what, before this, I posted on Facebook every now and then, but now I find myself posting more and more and more, number one, because I'm in the house. Number two is that I'm thinking and I'm trying to, you know, put something to get people's response, to make people laugh, you know, engage people. But what I was just thinking about when Chad was talking is that, you know, there are so many drug addicts out there that need to be inside somewhere during this time, and I need to really start focusing how to reach them, how to bring them in. There's so many facilities that are empty, and right now is a good time for you to come inside. And I just, that just ran across my mind when he was saying the beauty and the flowers, because you know everybody needs help, and if you don't know how to reach that person, it's hard. It's super hard. And that's my train of thought today, is how to bring them in from being out and all that. Mm-hmm. At least you're safe once you're in. But to stay out there, your chances are more of catching it or, you know, more than if you came inside, to at least you're getting clean as well as all that. So that's what I need to focus on starting today. I just thought about that. A way to bring them from out to in. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a task.
Oh, but you're up for the task. But you mentioned that some of these centers were empty. Are they empty just because of the COVID-19 and what we're going through, or have they been empty?
You know, a few of them I know have closed because they didn't want to deal with people. Because like I said the other day, we have no idea where these clients come from. You know, they're out in the streets, they're sleeping in the riverbeds, they're everywhere. So we are not knowing what they're exposed to. A young man came to me on Friday. They stopped him at the door because he had stuff all over his face. So they sent me pictures of it. And then just as he was standing there, a bed bug crawled across him. So I couldn't let him in. You know, unfortunately, he was a nice looking little young kid who needed help. But I couldn't let him in because we actually took a picture of a bed bug on him. So he had bed bugs. So I had to turn him away. And he said, if I go somewhere, get these off of me, can I come back? I'm like, sure you can. But, you know, he didn't come back. He went into treatment, but he went somewhere else. Somebody cleaned him up. Somebody sent him somewhere else. But that's to say, all people we can't take. And that's what we don't know what they have when they come to the door. We don't have any idea. But then there's some clients that come. Your one girl came yesterday. She has stuff all over her legs. I was hesitant to take her, but we looked at her. We have a doctor team. We have a good medical team. We took pictures, called them, and sent it to them. But she has skin rash. So I was able to take her. She has skin rash. It wasn't anything like that. But that's to say, we have no idea. And some facilities don't want to deal with it. And then there are some facilities that are just closed because they're not getting clients that they need to come through the door. So I know a few right now that want clients but can't get clients. And some are just closing down. At least, you know, because at first we couldn't close our facility. We only could close for 2 days in a row by the state, because we're licensed by the state of California, without any penalty. But now they changed it since the pandemic. You could say stay closed as long as the pandemic is going on and there's no penalty against you.
Wow. But you mentioned you wanted to get the message out to more people that they need to come inside. Do you have Chad? I want to talk about that. I want to go to Chad. Belinda was saying, obviously you heard her, you know, bringing more people inside from, you know, someone who spends a lot of time speaking to in different voices, because like you mentioned, you do cross promotion, but they have to be particular to any page. What kind of thoughts or ideas or advice would you have on getting messages out to more people?
Well, that's the trick, isn't it? To get the message out these days is almost harder than ever. There are so many competing voices out there for attention to make sure to get that message out that people need to come inside. That's been more or less successful for people who aren't unfortunate enough to be afflicted with addiction, to be living on the streets. To your point, that's something that I've seen. I just was around Port Authority, and unfortunately, we've had in New York, a lot of the shelters had been closed recently, and a lot of the communities, for example, where I am in Hell's Kitchen, there used to be a lot more shelters and centers to help people who were addicted, to people who had been turned out of their homes, and many of those had been closed down. And so what you saw was you saw a lot more people who were sleeping on the streets. You saw a lot more people who needed help who were just on the streets. And now that you have most everyone indoors, their plight is even illustrated even further, because now you see them without the relief of other people there as well. So when you go by Port Authority, when you go almost anywhere in the city, almost half the people you do see on the streets are those people who need to come inside, as to what you were talking about. So they're there. If I were to try and get the message out that you need to get these people inside, what about just going out and filming them? I mean, they're more visible now than they ever were. A lot of the problem why I think, in my humble opinion, why the homeless population isn't served as well, and why people who are afflicted with addiction aren't served as well, is because they're so easy to ignore. The average person walk right by them without seeing them. It reminds me of I don't know if you saw the old Terry Gilliam movie, The Fisher King, but there's this one scene in Grand Central where Tom Waits plays a homeless person, and he talks about that, and he talks about how he's a warning sign for people. At best, he's a warning sign. He goes, you know, you might want to go in there and attack your boss because he's driving you crazy, but then you think about me, and you don't do that. And I think there's some truth in that, because the average person is so wrapped up in themselves. To reach them is a hard thing to do. And especially when you're dealing with the unfortunate people, the people who are afflicted by addiction, because there's also they have to deal with a lot of stigma that is not fair, that they're poor, they deserve it, they made bad life choices, they deserve this, and that's usually not the case. But as it is right now, the people who are homeless, the people who are living on the streets, the people who are afflicted with addiction, right now they are more visible than ever. You can easily find them on the streets because they have nowhere else to go. So when you are on the streets and there are less people, we're more likely to see them now, and they are harder to ignore. Perhaps if you were to try to get the message out that these people need to come inside, could be just something as simple as walking around the streets and filming to see how many are still there. I know myself that if I walk behind Port Authority right now, I'm still going to see the people who need help, the people who are out of homes, the people who are afflicted by addiction. And where before the quarantine happened, every once in a while you would see someone pulling up, whether they were on a religious mission or whether they were a charitable organization, and putting out food for them. You just don't see that anymore. So now they're there, but they're without the people who are helping them. So I feel for you running a center for people who are afflicted by addiction right now, because that's got to be harder than ever right now.
It is.
I can imagine. And then also with everything going on in the world and everything we hear is go inside, it would seem to me, and this is not my profession, so that means I have no idea what I'm talking about, but that people may tend to go, you know, because sometimes addicts especially have these little holes, you know what I mean, like houses or places that they hold up for a little while whenever they need to do whatever they need to do. So fear kind of pushes us into a hole, as opposed to, I'm going to turn this into a question for you, Belinda, but do you feel as if they're going further into their addiction because of fear, as opposed to having this as a wake-up call that I need to change my life, that I need to do something different, I need to go to rehab?
Yeah, that could be true. You know, mostly the age range that we are really dealing with are 18 to 25. That is the age range of all the people coming to my facility are 18 to 25. Lately, it's been 18 to 23. Mm-hmm. And they have family, you know, but their addiction just has them separated them from their family. Mm-hmm. So they do have it, but, you know, the addiction overtakes them. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that drug is more powerful than any word you can say to them. And that's what happens. So it's kind of hard to fight a drug. It's super hard. I've been there. Yeah, I've been clean 28 years, and it was hard to get through that first year, but I've done it. So it's hard when it's mind over matter, really. But some people, at the time you're in addiction, you don't see that.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Congratulations. 28 years, nearly 30 years. That's nothing to sneeze at. Wow. I'm so happy for you. So proud of you.
Thank you. That's how I got into the industry I'm in, because of that.
Mm-hmm. I think you got in because of your heart. You have such a big heart. You're such a giver. You're always willing to give and to help people. But I want to go back to one of the things that you mentioned, the age group, the 18 to 23, 18 to 25. I just want to know, do you feel, or based on your research and statistics and experience, that it's that particular age group? Because those are the people who are willing to come in and look for help, as opposed to older people who have maybe been down this road a time or two and just kind of are used to the life that they're living?
You know, I think the thing is that with, you know, I talk to them when I go to the facility, and some of them, they just, you know, they go in spurts. Mm-hmm. They're out there, they use, then they get tired. They want to come in because, you know, we feed them and they have a roof for at least 30 days. But then some of them just can't stay inside. Then they go back out. They, you know, it's called on a run. So they're doing whatever they're doing. Then they come back. It's like, you know, in spurts, they go, they come, they go, they come. And we call, you know, they just keep relapsing. Some of them are just chronic relapse, but we do have a few that became successful. And all my staff are, were at one time an addict. They, you will always be, but now they're clean. So I only hire clean staff that have been in addiction before, because they know how to deal with people that are in addiction. Except for my daughter. She's the only one, but she's an administrator, so she's got to deal day to day with the clients.
Now, on social media, I was so happy because you posted a letter the other day from a young lady who, the whole letter was, Belinda, I lied to you. I deceived you, you know, but it turned around and became a positive. I want you to share, and you shared that on social media. I mean, you removed the name and everything, but you were vulnerable enough to share this letter on social media. And I want you to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, this young lady, I had a sober living home for women with kids. Mm-hmm. And she happened to be the first one that have came in. It was in Orange County, the house you went to that time we opened. For women with kids. So it was her and her daughter there. Her little girl was like two. Mm-hmm. And so she was the manager because she was the first one. And I thought she was clean. She tested clean for a good while. But then she started using. But it took a minute before it started showing. Eventually, you could use, but it'll always start to show. Mm-hmm. So it started showing. So then I put her in treatment. I detoxed her. I even let her bring her little girl with her. And we detoxed her. I sent her back. And then what she started doing was using, again, a little bit of time. And she was with me about 4 months all total. So it got to the point that I had to let her go because I saw really bad things. She had a car. She was having a wreck every other day. I mean, she was going to kill herself or her daughter. So finally, I just had to be stern. You know, you got to go. You can't be here. So she did leave, and she wrote that letter to me. And I asked her if I could post it before I posted it. She said, of course, yes, you can. So I just didn't post it, but I asked her. And, you know, she had took her name and stuff off of it when she sent it to me. But she's now 8 months clean. She was alcoholic. She's now alcoholics and Xanax was her thing. So now she's been 8 months clean. I could tell she's working a program because of the verbiage in the letter. It says she's working a program. So she did, you know, she's under where you have to make amends to people you deceived. And I was one of the ones she made amends to, because even though she used the first time, you know, I detoxed her and I put her back and I believed her a few times and she was just lying most of the time. But, you know, it is what it is. Those are the things we go through. Mm-hmm. And now today she has her daughter. She's good. She's really good. And this is the talk. I've never heard her talk like that. So I know she is actually doing it.
That's beautiful. That is beautiful. I love what you're doing. I love everything that you're doing. I want to go back to Chad for a minute because we talked about drugs and how they can affect people during this time. One of the things that you talk about and you help people with, Chad, is the whole gun violence epidemic or gun violence issue. But during this quarantine, COVID-19, this epidemic, I've seen articles and news where the purchase of guns has gone through the roof. Like people got toilet tissue, water, and weapons. What are some of the conversations you had? Because I know this is one of your areas of expertise.
Yeah, it is. So I'm currently working with an organization called Survivors Empowered. And it's an organization that was set up by my friends, Lonnie and Sandy Anglin Phillips. Mm-hmm. They actually lost their daughter in the Aurora Theater shooting. She was murdered there.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
They have since dedicated their lives to helping survivors of mass shootings everywhere. Mm-hmm. So Sandy Hook happened not long after the Aurora Theater shooting in 2012. Sandy Hook was my turning point. That's when I got involved. Mm-hmm. So Survivors Empowered is the organization I'm officially connected with. I help them on social media. Mm-hmm. Now, Sandy and Lonnie, you want to talk about how COVID intermingles with the gun violence epidemic. Sandy and Lonnie are currently in quarantine. You may have heard last week that the singer Jackson Browne was diagnosed as positive for COVID. Sandy and Lonnie actually had lunch with him just just a few days previous to that. So they are now in quarantine because of that. So on top of everything else they've been dealing with, COVID has also affected them personally. Mm-hmm. So we were talking about how gun violence and COVID and people buying weapons and stocking up. And I actually personally had to talk down. I'm in a lot of Facebook groups for stay-at-home dads and things like that. And in one of the groups, one stay-at-home dad was letting panic overtake him, and he was talking about how he needs to go buy a gun. And so I simply started asking him questions. I'm like, how much training do you have with a gun? None. Do you have any experience with a gun? No. Do you know how to store a gun? No. Do you have kids at home? Yes. Yeah. It's a bad idea for you to get a gun right now. I mean, for example, I understand being afraid. Mm-hmm. I understand wanting to keep your family safe. But if you're not trained with a weapon, if you don't know what you're doing, you're not properly licensed, and you don't have any idea of how you're going to store that firearm, and you have children at home, you're not going to keep your family safe. You're going to be in danger. Mm-hmm. So the statistics are somewhere around 8 children per day are shot by guns found in the home. Contrary to what most gun owners think, your kids do know where you keep your firearm, and they know where the ammunition is. Mm-hmm. When I was growing up, I was a proficient shooter. I knew how to fire. I was in cadets. I went hunting. I know my way around guns. But my father would not keep firearms at home. And I asked him about that because I would constantly ask him for guns. Why can't we have this gun? Why can't we have that gun? Because they were fun. They were cool. Mm-hmm. And his response was, you and your brother get into everything when we're not around. I can't have a gun in the house. You guys will mess around with it. And he was right. We totally would have. And mm-hmm. that's why he put me into cadets, because he goes, you want guns so much, then you will learn to use them the proper way. And I was trained. I had it drilled into my head that these are not toys. These are not fun. These are not something that you play with. These are weapons, and they have one purpose, and it is to kill people. Yes, they can be used for tools to do other things, but a firearm's primary purpose is to kill or wound another person. Simple. You can use them for hunting. You can use them for other things. But a handgun is really only useful for one thing. Now we've seen sales of guns spike, and that has been through fear. The gun lobby, unfortunately, likes to drive sales by scaring people. They've been doing this forever. Remember when Barack Obama was president and how every second day he was gonna come and get your guns? He never did.
Remember when he was president.
When he was president, yes, excuse me. But the NRA's constant drumbeat that they got out over and over again was that, you know, he's going to come get your guns. Mm-hmm. He never did. Mm-hmm. Then their big thing was when 2016 and Hillary and Trump were running, and the NRA went full behind Trump. And again, Hillary's going to come get your guns. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter now. Trump ended up winning, and with Trump in charge, gun sales actually fell, because now nobody's coming to get your guns. Mm-hmm. So with the COVID happening now, once again, the NRA is drumming up. They pressed lawsuits against California for deeming that gun sellers, gun stores were non-essential. Mm-hmm. And so the NRA quickly rolled out a ton of lawsuits against California for that. And the argument now is that gun sellers and gun stores are essential, and that we need them. Mm-hmm. Why? Why? What are you going to do? You're going to shoot the virus? You're going to put guns in the home of people who aren't trained and who have children? We've got 8 kids a day already that are getting shot and getting killed by found guns at home. Mm-hmm. Having a gun at home, especially if you're untrained, increases the rate of suicide, increases the rate of homicide, whether negligent or on purpose. Mm-hmm. You've got domestic abuse situations that are immediately made worse by a gun. You have a lot of misinformation being peddled out there by the gun lobby and by one man in particular by the name of John Lott, who invented the whole more guns means less crime. Mm-hmm. That's actually not true. America has been pumping guns into its society as the answer for everything for years now, and it's gotten worse since Sandy Hook. And what has happened? Shootings have become more frequent, and the body counts have gotten worse and worse. As it turns out, more guns means more shootings. The issue behind all of this is that as people, we are naturally nervous. We are naturally scared of things. We want security blankets. And that is the sort of feeling that the gun lobby takes and twists. Mm-hmm. We know you're afraid. There's a boogeyman outside your door. They're going to come steal your toilet paper during the COVID crisis. You better get a gun. Why? There's nobody. You know, it's all comes down to fear, and it all comes down to weaponizing that fear. And the root cause of all of it, as it always is money. Mm-hmm. All they want to do is make money off of selling guns. That's the whole reason the NRA exists. It's the whole reason that they're so tied to so many different politicians, and why the NRA is considered, even though they're apparently a nonprofit, which is mm-hmm. hilarious. I've worked for nonprofits, we're not allowed to say anything political, but the NRA gets to go ahead and endorse presidential candidates and tell states how to run their laws. I'm not sure how that works when they get to remain a nonprofit when they do that, but okay. And the other thing too is that the gun violence epidemics is not going down. Shootings are still clicking along at the same rate they always were. We hear mostly about the higher profile mass shootings because they're big news events, although lately there haven't been any because everyone's locked down. But a mass shooting is qualified as four people being shot, excluding the person with the gun. Mm-hmm. And that's regardless of whether or not anyone died. Mm-hmm. Mass shootings happen every day, and they're continuing to happen every day. There's always, not to be stereotypical, there's always someone that looks like me. It's always a white dude that goes.
Now, if I would have said that, I would have been wrong. You know, I say that all the time. I love the ID channel. That's my favorite channel. Investigation, yeah. Discovery. Oh, yeah. I could watch that, especially on Sunday, because Sunday is my rest day. I'll put on some ID channel. And since you brought it up, Chad, I'm going to mention it, but it's like, I'll watch, and it's like in the background. But then when the Black people come on, and it's, I'm like, oh, I got to watch, because this is not typical.
Yeah, to see what they done.
Yes, because it's,
you know, and not to cut you, but I just was thinking when Chad was talking about guns in the home right now, it's really, really bad because kids are out of school.
Yes.
Some kids are at home by themselves. And what do? They search. Yep. They find something to do. They find something to play with. Oops, here's a gun. Let's mm-hmm. play cowboys. Mm-hmm. And not knowing what can happen. Yeah. So it could be more than that now that kids are at home and stuck in the house mm-hmm. and super bored.
That leads into my next point is that we're going, like, not only has shootings not decreased, but they're going to go up. Now that we're all locked in with each other and driving each other crazy at home, it's not going to take long. I mean, like, people are already stir crazy. I think this is hilarious.
You know what? Somebody came to my house yesterday. Oh, the lady did my lashes. And we were talking. So then she's like, who lives here? I just said, me and my husband, just us two. And he's like, yeah, we're trying to practice social distancing. I'm like, you just don't know. We've been doing that for years. It's not nothing we have to do today. You over there and I'm over here. We don't watch the same thing on TV. So we've been doing that. It's just now that we have to do it, you don't want to do it. So mm-hmm. it's crazy. But, you know, that's just to, you know, bring something into the conversation that, you know, people do things without really even knowing. And I would never have a gun in here because I know my grandson loves guns. He's 5 and he will find it because he sniffs out everything.
Yeah.
So, you know, and he's out of school now. So I do keep him sometimes. But at the end of the day, it is it's dangerous. It's dangerous to have a gun because some people are really careless.
Mm-hmm. Most people.
Yeah, exactly. Most people are careless, not knowing, oh, it's in a box up under the bed, a shoebox, not a lockbox. Don't you think that kid saw you put that shoebox under there hundreds of times? Mm-hmm.
One of the false equivalencies that gun lobby spokespeople like to use a lot is that, oh, well, there's a lot of deaths from car accidents right now. What are you going to do? You're going to ban cars? And first of all, I have to say to that, first of all, nobody's talking about banning guns. We're talking about holding you to your own standards of being a responsible gun owner. And right. A responsible gun owner doesn't do what you just said, which is put a gun in a shoebox and leave it to the side. But too many times, that's exactly what people are doing.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing, and you want to talk about the difference between white people and black people in this situation, when you have a situation where a child finds a gun and maybe shoots their friend that is over and that child dies, if the parents are white and they lose their child to them finding a gun and shooting themselves, they are not punished because the thought is they've suffered enough. But if it's a black family and a black child finds a gun and kills himself, those parents are punished.
Exactly. You're right.
Isn't that strange? So
you're right.
Yeah. The other problem, of course, is that, as I was saying, is that the shootings aren't going down. They're still maintaining. We're just not hearing about it.
Yeah, because of this virus. Right
now, everything's COVID. But there's still every day, there's a guy who looks like me who just goes crazy and shoots his family one day. Those sort of incidents are continuing unabated. They're still happening. Children are still finding guns. People are still committing suicide, and they're all using guns. And so many false equivalencies are being thrown about that. Oh, well, they were going to commit suicide anyway. They would have found another way. Actually, when you look at recidivism rates, people who attempt suicide and fail hardly ever try it again. And it's usually a spur of the moment decision. Mm-hmm. A gun does not allow you that luxury. A gun is final. I mean, we're looking at a 99% effective rate.
Definitely. There was an interesting statistic on that I always relate to is it said that more women than men attempt suicide, but more men than women commit suicide. And the reason is usually women take sleeping pills or take some little thing and, 30 of them, but they usually wake up in the morning. It's usually a cry for help. When a man gets to the point where he's done, he picks up the gun, puts it to his head, and it's over. So we have to make sure in this time, I think more than anything else, that's why I wanted to talk to Belinda about the addiction and look at our emotions, because like Belinda was mentioning earlier, the whole, we're irritating each other. We're all in the house. I was talking to so many different friends. I don't know if this is just me, but I had a couple who just wanted to break up. I had a friend of mine who's been married for 8 years and now she wants a divorce. I had to literally talk her out of divorce. I'm like, we are in the middle of an apocalypse. This is not the time to get a divorce. I'm like, what if you need somebody to bring in the wood or kill the whatever you gonna eat, like go out and kill you a cow, or you need that animal, stay together. I know people are getting stir crazy, like you mentioned, but we got to keep our emotions, our feelings in check, because people are scared. They are afraid right now.
Yeah, that's true. I've been married for 29 years and it's every day. It still is hard, because you guys, you argue, you go your way, I go my way. We think about it, we meet together. But people during this pandemic, people are already on the edge. Mm-hmm. And all they need is just that little bit of something that ticks in their brain to say, it's over, I don't want to do this no more, and they leave. But you will regret it one day when it's coming, all this is over. You think about what you've done later, you don't think now. And it's sad because there, like you said, there are so many, even families, brothers and sisters fighting, breaking. I mean, so much stuff is happening now because you're closed in. Mm-hmm. And you have to stay in there. You go outside, you come back in. That's not the same thing as going to work for 8 hours, then coming back home. You need to be distanced for hours, not minutes. Mm-hmm. because those minutes is just like the little air kicking in your brain to say, do it, do it, do it. Hours away, you have time to think. You know, you're thinking, but minutes, you just do it, do it, do it. So it's going to be hard right now for everybody. Because this stand in the house, if I had all my kids living here with me, I'd probably done it. I'd have probably done it somehow, some way. Or just left them here and I moved somewhere else so it couldn't happen. No. I take the babies, but the older ones stay. They stay. I take the babies with me so y'all ain't got to worry about them seeing y'all fight. I'll take them. But life is really hard right now. And I see it from as a business owner and as a mother and a grandmother. Because every day I call, did y'all take those kids out today? No. Okay. I don't want y'all friends at y'all house. I don't want nobody coming around them. If you need to go somewhere, bring them here. And that's what they do, because I'm not going to let nothing happen to them. You know, I lost one of my granddaughters a few years ago, and that bothers me still. So I don't want this virus to take out another one. I can't deal with it. I'd have to go. I just have to. But, you know, life is hard right now for everybody.
Yes. And I was telling her, you know, because I try to, my belief is laughter heals. That's my passion. I love to do the stand-up comedy shows and just make people laugh through times of tragedy. And so I was trying to make my friend laugh when she was saying she was going to get a divorce. I'm like, but where are you going to go? Like, you can't go on a dating site. You can, you know, you can't go on a date. There's no restaurants. You can't meet anybody else. Just stay where you are. Just work it out. Stick through it, because this is not the time to break up, not the time for a divorce. I don't know.
Then you find a man and you gotta start all over knowing this man, knowing his habits, knowing what he does. I mean, not thinking if he's married, if he's lying to you. Stick with what you have and try to make it work instead of starting. That's for men and women. Why start? The grass is not always greener on the other side. It's just not. So stick with what you have until you really can't make it work. Don't let right here be a long time ago, not before this. And if you're going to leave after this, wait till after this is over, then think about it again. And then see what you're gonna, you know, see what the outcome is. But right now, you have to just stay in the house and focus. That's all it is focus.
Yes. So Chad, how about you? Are you getting a little stir crazy? Little, you know, you've been in a, how long you been in the house? 30 days?
Oh, wow. Has he?
No, I'm asking. I'm just making up numbers.
Oh.
Not quite that long. Schools here were closed on March 16th. So okay. We've obviously been in since, but we were in before that. The 16th was a Monday. So 15th, 14th, 13th, 12th. So Liam's been home from school since the 12th. And the reason he's been home from school since the 12th, because I actually fell ill on the 10th or the 11th. And I actually had a lot of symptoms similar to COVID, but not quite. I just know that I felt really terrible. I can't tell if it was because of the coronavirus or if it was just man flu, but... It was not good. I was laid up in bed for a couple days. The joke I like to make is men, if they break their arm, they're like, oh my God, I'll just go on. I'll be fine. I'll be fine. But, you know, if they get the flu, I'm dying. But so I'm hoping that's all it was just the man flu. But until I get tested, I have no way of knowing. And right now, there's just no testing here in New York. There's none. Mm-hmm. We're the epicenter of the COVID crisis right now. We're the harbinger of what's to come for everyone else, I think. Mm-hmm. But there's still no testing.
Wow, really?
Really. There's no way for me to get tested right now. They're setting up field hospitals on either side of me, and there's a hospital ship parked right over here. There's still no testing. COVID.
I read an article, though, now that you mentioned it, that said that from the end of December until now, a lot of people had the flu. I was one of the people who had the flu. I was in the bed for at least a couple of weeks. I didn't want to do anything. I had chills. I was sweating. I cannot get out of the bed. I literally had to make a public apology on Facebook because people were calling, leaving messages, and I was down for weeks, which is not typical for me. And then I read an article that said there were so many people who had the flu, but because we hadn't really become aware of the coronavirus or COVID-19, we don't know if it was the virus or not. But there were more people who had the flu this year than previous years.
This is why I'm so angry at the federal government and their botched response. Mm-hmm. They knew about this since December, since when you're talking about. And not only did they not do anything about it, they suppressed the information and they dismissed it and talked it down and said it was nothing. Over and over again, Trump said, oh, this is nothing. This is going to go away. This is nothing
but a hoax.
Again and again and again. And the lie has been put to his words yet again, because now we're looking at, it took us a month here in New York to get to 3,000 dead, and then it just took us another day to get to 4,000.
But you know what? The question I have is that, because I remember back in November, December, when people were saying, oh, I had this cold or this flu, it lasted for 2 weeks or 3 weeks. I remember that. Mm-hmm. But if you've had it once, can you get it again? I haven't heard anything about that.
I read that. Oh, go ahead, Chad.
Whether or not you, if you have it again, by that you mean show symptoms. Like, I was sick. Will I get sick from this again?
Yes.
Well, that's something I can't speak to. But what I can speak to is that the virus will remain within you. And even if you don't get sick, you can make other people sick, mm-hmm. which is why we're all doing this right now.
Yes, so, I read on that as well. So I'm not exactly sure. I did read that, and I'll have to find the article. I'll find the article for you, Belinda. But they were saying that once you have it, then you're not going to be sick from it again, which is one, they were talking about one of the reasons why you have other illnesses, they give you the vaccine. And the vaccine actually is the illness. They're putting it in you so you can get it into your system, get it out of your system, and that you're done with it. But I want to mention and state, I am not a doctor. I have no degrees in anything. I love research. I love reading. So I would like to find that article. But that's what I've read.
Well, the reason the coronavirus is so prevalent right now is because so many people are infected with it and do not show symptoms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they don't know it.
My assumption going forward is that I am infected. Mm-hmm. My assumption going forward is that my family is infected. Mm-hmm. We may not be showing symptoms, but we are probably carrying the virus. Mm-hmm. And this illustrates right now just how botched the federal government's response has been. Mm-hmm. Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky was just diagnosed as coming down as positive with the COVID virus, and he showed no symptoms. That mm-hmm. morning, he was in a congressional gym. He was in the congressional meeting places. He was meeting with other members of the Republican Congress. Mm-hmm. Later that day, Mike Pence, our vice president, came out and said, if you're not showing symptoms, you don't need testing, mm-hmm. which makes absolutely no sense, because Rand Paul got tested and he showed no symptoms. The problem is not the people who are showing symptoms. The problem is people who aren't. And that is why we're doing this. It's why it's so dangerous, because we don't know who has it. We don't know who doesn't. And testing over and over again. When you look at the places like South Korea or Japan, who have have more successfully battled this epidemic than the United States has. It is because testing, they went down. Who has it? Who doesn't? Separate out those who have it from those who don't. Stop the spread, flatten the curve. That's what they've done successfully. And it's why that we haven't seen the epidemic levels in South Korea or in Japan that we're seeing here. The flattening the curve right now in the States, we're some time away from that because we're so far behind the eight ball. Trump knew about this, and the Trump administration knew about this since at least January. And they're all now saying, oh no, we couldn't do anything because the Dems were distracting us with impeachment or whatever. Well, that's all happy malarkey, because they didn't do anything. They didn't show any witnesses. They did nothing but block testimony. They did nothing but let one side talk and then just shut them out, like we all knew they were going to. And all Trump did was play golf and throw parties. I mean, how was he distracted?
That's what Trump does. I want to ask a question about one of the statements that Trump made as far as reopening the government. I call it the government, but reopening everything. Yeah. He said America is not meant, it was not built to be shut down. So initially he was planning to try to open it April 6th, and then he moved to Easter Sunday. And now I think we're somewhere around April 20th. But what are your thoughts? First I'll ask Belinda, and then I want to go to chat, but what are your thoughts, Belinda, on how we come out of this or reopening everything?
You know, number one, a lot of people will not come out of this. A lot of businesses cannot overcome being shut down this long. Mm-hmm. They've lost so much money, then you lose your savings. How are you going to come back out of it? And I think if there's no cure and you open things up on Easter, that's like, what, 2 weeks away? Mm-hmm. Nothing has changed. Nothing's been accomplished. You're going to have more people getting sicker because people, like I said, people don't even know they have it. Mm-hmm. So what's the difference between today and 2 weeks from now, unless they come up with a cure? If not, why open up stuff when you're still going to have double of what's happening now? And kids, you can't let if they even open the schools, my babies are not going to school until they find out how this is caught, until they find a cure for it. If I have to hire a tutor to come here, that will happen, but I will not let them go to school. And some businesses are already doomed. They cannot open back up. When they shut everything down, I don't think they really thought about some of the places they shut down. But, you know, I know they have to do what they have to do, but yet and still, there are people whose businesses are gone. There are people who will never get those jobs back. Mm-hmm. That's the main thing. There's people that will never work again after this. So, you know, that is my thought on that. And if you open in 2 weeks, it's not going to change nothing. You're going to have more deaths because it's still spreading. It hasn't stopped. Mm-hmm. So that's something I think they shouldn't do. You know, that's just my little one opinion, is that it's too soon. It's too soon.
That's what we want, your opinion. I definitely agree with you. I read an article that said the virus is going to bankrupt more people than it actually kills. You know, that's where it's going to hit us. You know, America, the world is on its knees. It's really broken. We have to figure out how to repair it, even though one of the opportunities is you have our families coming together and people working from home. So it's having an incubation of creativity, people, entrepreneurs coming up with new ideas, because we still have to eat. We still have to figure out how to survive. But our old way of doing business, our old way of that job we had, is not going to be there. I definitely agree with you on that point, Chad.
And one other thing just came to my mind, I'm so sorry, is the rent. They're saying, don't pay rent for April and May, but then you're not saving anything if you can pay your rent, because you're still going to have to pay it. Mm-hmm. You just can't pay it now. And when this is over and you still owe that back rent, they can still evict you. Mm-hmm. They can give you a notice to pay, 3-day notice to pay or quit, then they can still evict you. So you're just prolonging the inevitable of being evicted. If you can't pay your rent, that's one thing. But if you can pay it and tell the landlord you can't, you got to pay it eventually anyway, or then it's going to go on your credit report and mess up your credit. So that's not a win-win situation. It's not.
Yes, that's what people need to hear, that rent is going to be due. My mom and I were discussing this yesterday, just about the mortgage and how her bank was working with her. But they did explain to her that when this is over, it's due. Not like, okay, now you have 6 more months in pay. No, nope, it's due. So, yes. Chad, what are your thoughts on that?
So, this is the point where I point out that I have all these happy cartoon characters behind me to remind you that not everything.
Your world is different.
Because what I'm about to say is definitely not going to match my background. We are in for a lot of trouble. We are in for a lot of pain. I am saying, from what I'm seeing from the absolute disorganization I'm seeing from different states, New York is as on top of it as we can be, considering that the federal government is making our governor bid against other states for the resources that we need to stop this crisis. But then you've got states like Florida and Mississippi that aren't doing anything about this. Mm-hmm. So even if we shut things down, it won't matter because it's just going to flare up again in other states.
Mm-hmm.
I've used this analogy for gun violence and the patchwork fabric we have across the country for gun laws. In New York, for example, gun laws are sane and common sense, but in other states, you can just walk around with a gun, whatever. You know, mm-hmm. you don't even need a permit, just walk around with it, it's okay, which mm-hmm. makes no sense. So now translate it over to COVID and coronavirus. New York, we're shutting everything down, we're battling it, we're building field hospitals, we're scrambling to get resources, we've got a governor who's out there every day crusading to get us these resources. And as a personal note, I never liked Cuomo. He always personally annoyed me, but the leadership I'm seeing from him right now is pretty special.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't matter if we get it locked down if other states aren't doing their same due diligence, if other states aren't doing that same responsibility. And I'm not seeing that. Mm-hmm. Florida has got an even greater hotspot going on than New York does, but they're not getting the coverage because they've got a governor that won't shut down. They've got a governor that's not listening to scientists as the medical community. In Wyoming, the governor just went up and said, no, we don't believe any of this. We're going to shut down. Here's our medical officer. And the medical officer came up and said, yeah, we need to shut down. And the governor's like, nah, we're not going to do any of that. So the irresponsibility we're seeing from other leaders in different states and in the federal government is going to prolong this.
Mm-hmm.
People are saying, oh, April 30th here in New York. No, we're in this for the long haul. Johnson & Johnson was talking about how they're working on a vaccine now. They're just working on the vaccine now. By earliest, they'll have this by 2021. Mm. A pandemic is about 400 days. This is going to go on and on. The more disunity there is, the more discord, the more truth is divided down partisan lines as it is right now, the longer this is going to go on. Yes, you're right. Businesses are not going to survive this. I'm also saying we're probably looking at a complete and total economic collapse. I mean, we've got a faulty healthcare system that is straining at the seams already, and we're just at the start of this. We've got an economy that is supported heavily by insurance companies that are going to get smashed. I mean, everyone. I mean, Trump just said the other, yesterday? He's like, we're going to try and keep deaths between 100 to 200,000 people. Well, what? He's expecting, at best guess, 200,000 people dead. Do you know how many people are going to have to be in the hospital for that to be just 200,000 dead, especially if we're looking at a death rate of 2 to 3% from COVID? If that's 200,000 people that die, that's millions more in the hospital. Mm-hmm. And the system cannot support that. It's not set up for that. And the fact that we still have no leadership in Washington, oh, they got the MyPillow guy to help. What? Why are you talking to A-Rod, Trump? Mm-hmm. What are you doing? And what we're looking at is probably the most significant disaster to hit the American economy that has ever happened, quite frankly. Having said that, I'll be posting pictures of flowers.
Okay.
I almost saw Chad. I felt like Chad was about to stand up there for a minute. And just, I saw the passion in what you were saying.
Yeah. Very bad, unfortunately.
We are coming down to the last few minutes of the show, and what I love to do is to allow each of you, we're going to start with Belinda, an opportunity to just give our audience, people who are watching live and watching in the archives, a few closing words.
You know, I just want everybody to stay calm, do the best you can during this trying time, because it's here. I think I posted about 3 weeks ago, almost a month, that this would bring down our nation, and it seems like it's happening. So people just, stay calm, stay focused, and try not to think the worst, and God bless everybody, all of us, because right now we need all of that.
Yes, all the prayers. Chad?
So many, many great people over the history of humanity have echoed the sentiment that I'm going to relay now. I believe Dr. Martin Luther King was one of them, and I'll paraphrase it. And the measure of a person is not what they do in the time of peace or in the time of prosperity. The measure of the person is how they react in the time of crisis, in the time of great strife.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we are now in a time of great crisis and great strife. And so it is incumbent upon all of us right now to find our own strength and to find our own purity and to remember that goodness and kindness is what's paramount right now. My best wishes to you for dealing with the people who are suffering from addiction right now.
Thank you.
That is the sort of nobility that we need to lift up these days. There are bad times coming. We need to make sure now more than ever to hold on to what is good. Mm-hmm. Right now, what makes me good is the fact that my son is happy.
Hmm.
I need to hold on to that. And that is how I get through.
That's wonderful. We get to get little Liam back his room now. He's like, Dad, you gotta go. Get out. That is wonderful. I want to thank both of you for joining us on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk with Sharifa Hardy and co-host Belinda Baker.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. You are so welcome. I want to thank you to everyone who tuned in live, everyone who's watching this in the archives. We are here weekday mornings at 8 a.m. and we are live. Be sure to share and be sure to support our guests. We're definitely going to have Chad back. I have some more questions. Maybe he'll be able to tell me, you know, some more of what's going on in his life. Come back, tune in, share this, and to be a guest, visit the website at AskSharifa.com. Bye now.
Thank you.